Part 2. Detrimental Actions. Chapter 16. A Husband's Confession. May 14, 2011. It is 7 months later. This morning's events have been unsettling for me. I decide to calm my nerves by watering my plants and enjoying the Florida sun. I am lost in my troubling thoughts as I let the warm sun calm my body. I am forced into the present as chilly water splashes on my feet as I hold an empty watering can. I try to take my mind off this dreadful feeling in my gut that something is terribly wrong. I cannot understand why Gerard acted so impatient to get to his clients at the Salvation Army, and why is he going in on a Saturday? Again, I try to continue to tend to my plants until I hear the sound of tires close by. I turn to see my husband driving in the carport. This does not look like the man I saw earlier. His face is white and sweaty. Is he sick or has he heard horrible news? My body starts to tremble and a lump form in my throat. We both enter on opposite sides of our porch and pause briefly as I try to make eye contact. He walks off into the kitchen and puts down his work bag. The panic sets in as I follow him into our home. What is the matter? You look terribly upset. There is a pause as I look intensely at him, trying to get him to look at me. He turns away. He slowly puts down his head and sighs. His voice shakes and cracks as he says, "I'm in lots of trouble." What's going on? I become increasingly concerned. Complete silence falls over the room. I cannot take it anymore and ask again with more conviction. What did you do, Gerard? I have been accused of something really bad. He stands there in a daze, frozen in time. Impatient for more information, I ask, what is it? He pauses for what seems forever, and then he looks up. I stare straight into his eyes. He still does not speak. So I shout, "Come on, what?" My intensity surprises me. He drops his gaze to the floor again and walks to the bar, dividing us. He cannot look me in the eye as he sputters these words. "I've been accused of having one of my clients give me oral sex." I stand at the bar, gripping tightly at the edge because I am afraid I will fall to the floor. Sheer terror turns my legs to rubber as I fight the spinning room. I open my mouth, but nothing comes out. The whole room starts to go black, except for the small tunnel as our eyes meet. I muster up enough courage to ask if it is true, not really wanting to hear the answer. "Did it happen?" He bows his head and pauses for too long. I say repeatedly in my head, "This is not real. This cannot be happening. Oh my God!" I catch an almost undetectable nod of his head. I am dumbstruck. I look him up and down, thinking, I do not know this man standing in our kitchen. How could he cheat on me with a client? This not only risks our marriage, but his job as well, his reputation. How could he do it? I steady my legs and slowly walk over to the dining room window. A sick feeling invades my stomach, and an incredible emptiness takes over. My lips tremble as I try not to cry in front of him. I cannot look at his face. I am totally disgusted with his presence and desperately want to leave, but my legs do not work. He just stands there looking guilty. I cannot say how much time passes, but I hear him ask me, "Come on, Deb, haven't you ever cheated on anyone?" I cannot believe he is asking me this. "No, I have not. I would never do that to anyone, including you." Okay, I am sorry. I should not have asked you that. I would think you should know me by now, but then I thought I knew you too, and I never would have believed until just minutes ago that you could be so deceitful and reckless with our marriage. A thought crosses my mind. "How did you find out about this?"
"Someone from work called me when I was on my way home."
"One of the staff?"
"No," Gerard barks at me.
"Well, then who?"
One of my clients called. The one I had been with told her friends about what happened, and they encouraged her to go to the Rape Crisis Center to file a complaint. Rape. Crisis. This is the first time I think of it in those terms. Before this moment, I thought he meant this encounter with his client was consensual. Rape Crisis Center? Oh my God, you forced her? No, no! I slowly shake my head in a constant no movement while thinking, did I just hear that? He is quick to respond. Remember last week when I told you one of my clients wrote a sexually explicit letter to her ex-boyfriend, who she is legally forbidden to have any contact with? By now, I am nodding with repulsion while remembering our conversation. I remember reminding you what your ethical responsibilities were as the clinical supervisor. I strongly suggested you turn the letter in since it was a violation of her parole. She is the one. I never turned the letter in. I know I should have, but I really did not want to get her in trouble. She has been trying to get her life together. I am too traumatized to even speak by this point as my husband tries to explain his actions. He continues. It was in my desk this afternoon when it happened. She told the police she went along with my advances because she was afraid if she did not, I would turn the letter over to drug court and she would go back to jail. So it is considered coercion, I guess. But honestly, Deb, I never threatened her with turning over the letter. I thought what we did was consensual. Whatever, it was not rape. You must believe that. So she knew you had the letter in your desk and you ask for a sexual favor. How do you think she was going to feel? You risked your career, your reputation for that? No, you do not understand, trying to defend himself. I cannot believe this. You reluctantly agreed you would turn that letter in to your supervisor the next day. You know you were obligated to. I do not know what to think. Why didn't you just turn it in? I am supposed to believe that holding on to that letter did not have anything to do with what happened today? It did not. You must believe me. I made a mistake, but I did not rape her. This is 1 million times worse than I first thought. My husband, who up until a short while ago I trusted completely, just broke his vows to me and committed a horrendous crime against a woman. I am still trying to process this when Gerard says, I really need to get out of here for a while. Good, because I cannot look at you right now. I do not think about where he is going or what he is going to do. I just want to be rid of him so I can think. I am starting to comprehend the chain of events that are about to become my life. Not only is he unfaithful to me, but he is a criminal and could go to prison for this. I cannot think of this right now. I must figure out what I am going to do. Even though I know I am in no condition to drive, my better judgment goes out the window. He is not the only one who needs to get out of here, I think to myself. I grab my keys and head to my Mustang, craving a long drive with the top down and the wind blowing through my hair. I am hoping the wind will blow away all my dreadful thought since Gerard walked in the door today. Driving to the ocean comes naturally, thinking it will soothe me, but today it has the opposite effect. I am flooded with so many wonderful memories of our walks on the beach. We even got married on the beach. Now those memories are filled with an ocean of questions. My head is going to explode as tears start streaming down my face without a warning. When I come back to the present, I am parked and fear floods over me. My body does not have 1 ounce of energy left. So I sit bewildered. I put my hands up to my face and scream. Oh my God, I cannot believe what is happening. How could he do this to me, to us, to her? What am I going to do? What am I going to do? Unexpectedly, I have a horrendous vision of Gerard with his client, doing what they were doing hours ago. My stomach starts to churn and burn. I try to breathe deeply to calm my whole body down. It is not working. I open the door and lean out of the car and retch up nervous bile that has been building up in my stomach over the last hour. This does not make me feel any better. What am I going to do? I wish I were in Maine where I could turn to my family and friends. How am I going to explain this to anybody? I need help dealing with this, but I feel so alone, terrified, helpless, and devastated. Most of all, I am embarrassed to have a husband who would do that. I need to figure out a way to get me and my belongings back to Maine. These questions come too fast to comprehend. When things get bad, I will think of Maine until I can get there. I will think of my son, daughter-in-law, my beautiful new granddaughter, my country home, and the comfort of my dear old friends. I am so glad I did not listen to Gerard when he wanted me to sell my house up north. I just must figure out how to get there. I cannot stay here. That is not an option. I cannot get away fast enough. I do not know this man anymore. I start punching the steering wheel hard with my fist, over and over. I am not sure what this accomplishes, but it is an outlet for my pain and anger. Out of the corner of my eye, I see a couple staring at me as they get into their car. I turn away as my cheeks get redder, so I try to calm down until they drive away. I nervously chuckle when I think what I must have looked like. If they were mandated reporters, as I am, they would be obligated to call the police for my safety and others. Someone should take this poor, crazy soul to the psychiatric unit. Who knows? Maybe that is where I belong right now.